You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for February 8th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Karl Rove's GOP one-stop quickie lube shop, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hello, baby. How are you doing?
Hi, good. I can hear you fine.
Good.
So, if Karl Rove's going to give the Republican Party a new paint job.
As I noted, as it occurred to me today, the GOP is just like a car that needs a paint job, and that car's name is Christine.
Oh, we saw that movie this weekend.
We did. We did. And it just keeps coming back from the dead. It just keeps coming back and destroying everything. And
that was a Stephen King story.
It was one of the late 70s or early 80s Stephen King stories, back when he was writing a novel a week.
Yeah.
And it is just relentless. It ultimately depends on one crazy evil person willing to bring it back to life every time.
Yeah, with money.
With money, or with
plenty effort. Plenty of money, yeah.
You know, with blood and effort and money, but it's the same fucking killing machine. And no matter how many times you put it through the car compactor, the last shot of the movie is going to be that little fender just bending itself back out.
Popping right back out.
Because unless you take it to Mount Doom and throw it in the fires of the Southern Confederacy, you have to take it to Stone Mountain, Georgia. You have to take it down and throw it in the volcano. It'll keep coming back because it doesn't matter how many times you polish this turd. It doesn't matter how many times you rebrand it. It's the same people. And it has always been the same people. Mm-hmm. And it has always been a conscious decision to embrace them and welcome them into your party in order to win votes. And
And it occurred to me, I was reading Crooks and Liars this morning, and one of the commenters, McNairbo, said, I'm seeing a trend here. Does the Republican Party have to change its name every 2 years to be viable? And that's really Frank Luntz's job. He has made a career.
Yes,
an entire full-time, endless career at rebranding the same Republican Party, the same ideas.
The same people, the same base, the same ideas, the same ideology, the same bullshit, the same racism, the same gun nuttery, the same Bronze Age idea of science, all repackaged every couple of years. And you really can't just hop it back and back every couple of years. And the thing that really is most it's like a safe house, you know. Mm-hmm. They just every couple of, I think the person said witness protection program.
Yeah, witness protection. They need a witness protection program for their bad ideas to hide them.
But they don't hide them.
Well, and this is something that Heather pointed out at Crooks and Liars that I thought was really important.
Uh-huh.
That the reason the rebranding is a joke is because they have the house.
Yeah.
If they lose the house, then they can rebrand themselves endlessly.
Yes.
Because they will have no voting record of passing crazy stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, the 34th repeal of Obamacare abortion bill number 712.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not passing that sort of thing because they don't have any power, then they can rebrand themselves all they want. But if they have a voting record where they actually are legislating and the things that they pass are a joke, mm-hmm. then you can't hide their priorities.
Well,
there are plenty of people who don't want to hide those priorities.
No, like they're proud of
Joe Walsh and Steve King and, World Net Daily. They all think this is just fine and no one's going to tell them they're unelectable because they're right.
And that's the thing. You have this perfectly schizophrenic mm-hmm. relationship where in one sentence, they say, you should embrace your inner Klansman, baby. You should be proud of the fact that you want women to be second-class citizens. You should be public. You should go right up to the barricades and shout to the heavens that those goddamn Mexicans are not getting in my country. We're putting up a wall,
actually a legislator who said something about being concerned that aborted babies might go to hell.
Yes.
And so what we really have to do is stop abortion because of this cosmic, thing that, you know, we need to be worried about the afterlife for people. And
we need to rendition that really dumb son of a bitch to the Jesuits.
Crazy.
And have the Jesuits explain to him about, ensoulment.
And all kinds of things.
But that on the one hand, people on the right are encouraged by their freak show entertainers and carnival barkers who run their party to loudly proclaim their heart's true belief. And in the same breath, they're reminded to keep it a terrible secret. Keep it completely quiet. Don't tell anyone that you're part of that you believe this shit. So you have a great deal of confusion because for 40 years, the bigoted, crazy, snake-handling base of the party has been told over and over again that they should be proud. They shouldn't be unashamed. They should wear their faith on their sleeves. And they should get right up in liberals' faces because liberals are traitors and hate America. And they should speak in simple, stupid, declarative sentences all the batshit things that they believe. And now they're being told, but shut up about it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk in public about it. We need to find a way to shut these people up.
But they don't. They can't shut up if they are running the Virginia Senate and House, the state Senate and House in 23, 24, 26 states, I think it is. Yeah. The Tea Party controls the legislature in 26 states. So they're going to pass abortion bills and ultrasound bills and crazy tax schemes that tax the poor at the expense of the rich and on and on and on.
And the other thing that's changed is, frankly, the ready availability of audio and video. If you're a member of that bubble, if you live beyond the event horizon of Republicanism, where nothing can escape and nothing can get out, and in this bell jar, rebreathing your own beer farts year after year, you don't notice the fact that you're crazy. You're, you know, the cult of the people who rub shit in their hair. Yeah. But if you're outside it, you look increasingly really mentally unhinged, because you will not even acknowledge the shit you said 5 minutes ago because Rush Limbaugh told you to change your mind, except he didn't say change your mind. He just put a new piece of programming into your head, and now you're repeating it over and over again. But those of us who are actually participating in the real world out here are getting, and this is where I think we're actually passing through, we're actually in the middle of a very important historic moment.
Mm-hmm.
I included a little quote from myself, if you don't mind me being self-indulgent, in our notes from 2006, which I got via a reprint of my own stuff back when the Tea Party was being launched. And a local Chicago broadcaster named Phil Ponce, an affable, nice guy, just turned the microphone over to him and let them spew their bullshit on the air about, you know, we're just a grassroots organization and we're not political and we have no background in politics and we have nothing to do with this. We're just a natural uprising driven by our outrage over the deficit and the direction our country's taking, blah, 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 blah. When 5 minutes with a mouse and a computer would have told you that's all bullshit. These are all Republicans. These are all Republicans who have scraped off their Bush-Cheney bumper stickers, burned their Bush-Cheney lawn signs, and have pretended that they're not part of anything, that they had nothing to do with the Republican Party for the last 40 years. But
Dirk Glass, I think that even as big as they're pretending that they weren't Bush Republicans, mm-hmm. Karl Rove is pretending that he never used them to get elected.
Well, and I will just mention, in interior to that 2010 post was this little thing from 2006 by yours truly. And I said, in 5 years, having voted for Bush will become the parachute pants of this decade.
Yep.
It will become the, oh my God, what the fuck was I thinking? Shameful secret people will occasionally and elliptically allude to by piping up with, well, he did go after 9/11. As school children are taught what a disaster on every front and by every measure he was. And as adults who now have to pay and pay dearly for the myriad lies and crimes of follies of George W. Bush, recount his top 100 fuck-ups and bitterly laugh and laugh and laugh. And that was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And we have reached the moment where Republicans have stopped being addicted to tax cuts. They've stopped being addicted to guns, any particular policy. Now they're just addicted to rebranding.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Completely addicted to the fantasy. And this, I believe, I firmly believe 9/11 planted this in their head.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and
called it their get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
They think they are entitled to one every 2 years
and
for whatever they did.
Like a virgin touched for the very first time. They really believe that no matter how badly they fuck up, the magic rebranding pony will show up and just make the past go away. And it's worked so far.
Well, and I think it is tied in very clearly to their fundamentalist religious faith that you can always be reborn, you know, born again. That's what that is part of their DNA, is that you can be born again.
Being reborn is a whole different matter. And especially
you fail as many times as you want, as you have to get closer to God. I think it's exactly why it's okay if you're a Republican. We'll reelect people that went out with hookers. We'll reelect people who got, you know, cheated on two wives in a row with Newt Gingrich. We'll forgive anything as long as you're in our tribe.
Yes.
And Karl Rove never saw that Christianity as anything but a tool, but they were a third of his tripod, yeah, along with billionaires and races.
Yeah.
He had these Christian right wingers that he thought were crazy.
Yeah.
And you and I watched a video of David Kuo, K-U-O, who was part of the faith-based
mission
of George W. Bush and true believer.
Number two guy. He was the number two man in the faith outreach.
Bush White House in the outreach to Christian faith-based initiatives. And, you know, George W. Bush promised $8 billion to help poor people through Christian organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big problem with that because it goes against the separation of church and state, in my opinion, and in the opinion of the Constitution.
But
he was, David Kuo was a true believer and wanted compassionate conservatism to help the poor, and was totally, I mean, he said there isn't a single person on the Christian right that the Bush White House didn't make fun of on a regular basis. Yeah. And so Rove now is trying to cut off Joe Walsh and Steve King and all these people who depend on total anti-abortion, total religious right-wing, Tea Party activist nut jobs. And he's trying to cut them off and say, well, you're not electable, without acknowledging that he built this.
Yeah.
They had total critical role in his coalition that was going to be the permanent Republican majority.
Yep. On purpose. All engineered by them.
He's pretending that didn't happen to save his ass after he failed on Fox election night Eve. You know, that's
Pretending bad things didn't happen is sort of the Republican brand.
It's really good at that.
Sort of what they have. But we're right in this moment that is most similar to, I think, in recent memory, 2006, in that right before the Republicans got their asses handed to them in 2006 in the House and Senate, Don Rumsfeld was the greatest Secretary of Defense in history, and Bush was never going to let him go. Mm-hmm. And the minute he lost, Rumsfeld was given his walking papers.
I think Rumsfeld escaped. I think he took the money and ran. I think that was intentional.
The only person who lamented him was Dick Cheney. Yep. Moment where it starts to fall apart. And the only time that... And this is important if you're a liberal, if you're a progressive, because there was a brief moment there by the sheer weight of the colossal serial failures of the Republican Party and the conservative movement, exactly as liberals said it would happen, that grudgingly forced people in the media to acknowledge that A, liberals exist, and B, on certain matters, through clenched teeth, we will admit very grudgingly and with a lot of qualifiers that maybe they weren't completely wrong about George Bush. The only person who said this publicly that I know of on air on any kind of show that wasn't on MSNBC, for example, was John Heilman, who said liberals really do have reason to be pissed off at the media because they were the ones who were saying George Bush is lying, we're being lied into war, this is going to be a catastrophe, and they were right. And the media treated them like dogs, like traitors, like they didn't even exist. And centrist Democrats treated us that way, too. And it turned out at the end of the day, we were right and they were wrong. And again, since that time, since that period when it was painfully clear that all the people on this side of the equation had gotten everything wrong, it's now become clear that they didn't just get the war wrong. They got deficits wrong. They got economics wrong. They got unemployment wrong. They got deregulation wrong. They've gotten the environment wrong. There's nothing left for them to be wrong about.
Well, this is what Paul Krugman was saying last weekend, too, that how many times do I have to be right before you'll actually believe me? Oh, we can't trust you because you might be wrong that one time.
In the future, it's possible you might be wrong. Therefore, we won't trust you now. At that moment, there was this sheer weight of failure that forced the media to grudgingly admit that liberals existed and that they were right. And we're now at a point where the sheer number of times the GOP has rebranded the same turd and repolished the same turd and resold the same poison and pretended, no, this time we're going to wear lederhosen and play bagpipes. But you're the same idiots. You're the same fucking racists. You're the same fucking snake handlers you've been for 40 years. Yeah, but, oh, look over there, something shiny. The Tea Party was sort of their last gasp at being able to rebrand themselves as a real conservative movement in a way that let their base off the hook. And more importantly, let them off the hook for letting these crazy sons of bitches get away with it.
Yeah, because now the base is emboldened to just be out there
and so
winning,
it's not this is not just drunken daddy the morning after and mom in the kitchen making pancakes and there's holes in the wall and the checkbook is empty and they're everybody's bruised and centrist mommy is saying, remember, everyone ignore what daddy did last night, let's just pretend it didn't happen. It's not that, it's that again. We're back to the same point of origin again. Every time the Republican Party cycles through one of these psychotic episodes, we end up back here where all the serious people in the media are going to pretend that nothing happened, and if we only just ignore it, if we just keep pretending liberals were wrong or liberals don't exist or the opinions that liberals have been touting for decades haven't been proven right over and over and over again, if we just don't make crazy conservative daddy angry, then maybe this time he'll stop hitting us and stop setting fires and stop throwing the TV at the neighbor and stop insulting the black guy down the block and stop yelling at Mexicans out of his car window. But he's never going to stop. The only way to stop him is to put him in the ground, is to throw him out the door.
I was going to say, expose him for what he is, and then decent society has to arrest him and put him away.
And
and
no,
that's what
other
has to happen.
And so it's not that, oh my God, the Republican Party fucked up and screwed up and did all these terrible things. We told you this was going to happen. We told you every time they've gone down this path, because conservatism is inherently corrupt. Conservatism as an ideology, as it's practiced in America over the last 40 years, is doomed because it is inherently a corrupt and deranged ideology that cannot work ever. And let's be very clear. Every time you hear people talking about rebranding, the centrists groping to try to make false equivalents, they always latch onto Bill Clinton. Well, Bill Clinton reinvented the Democratic Party. Yeah, and he did. And you'll notice that all the conservative shit he adopted is all the stuff we now have to undo.
Absolutely. Don't ask, don't tell. NAFTA, all of these things that were supposed to be, you know, compromises.
Deregulating the banks.
Yeah.
All of those things are the things that we now are acknowledging were bad ideas and screwed up the economy or left people out in the cold or hosed people who were gays and lesbians and were just horrible ideas. And really, really, really left us in a bad place. They were the conservative ideas he added to the liberal mix to make it palatable to centrists. This moment in history is one in which I think we're going to pass through it and it'll end up in our rearview mirrors. And 5 years from now, 4 years from now, someone will do some grudging retrospective on, remember back in 2013 when the Republican Party really just hit the wall at 60 miles an hour and had nothing left? And it turns out, in retrospect, yeah, they were all crazy. But I would like for at least our progressive and liberal listeners and our libertarian listeners to stop for a moment and think carefully about how many times we've had this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
How many times we have stood at the foot of the rubble created by conservatives and said, we told you this was going to happen. We told you. For God's sakes, why the fuck aren't you listening? And I'm praying to you, Chris Matthews. I'm asking you, Rachel Maddow. I'm saying, Chris Hayes, maybe you can start having some conversations around the topic of, have you noticed that liberals have gotten everything right and that Michael Steele, our guest tonight, has gotten everything wrong? And start having a conversation about how many different times does conservatism need to fail miserably? And how many times does it need to be propped up by David Gregory and David Brooks miserably?
For money and for a horse race. So that mainstream media can cover a horse race. Yep.
That the problem is this group of people. And this group of people is the contagion that must be contained.
And we mentioned that last week, that, you know, there just is an addiction to both sides. Both sides have to be viable. And they're just not. Mm-hmm. And I want to read a letter. This might be a good time to read the letter, if you don't mind.
Please do.
We got a wonderful letter. We get wonderful letters, and I'm so grateful to everyone who writes us, either by email or by U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Union, because we don't say snail mail anymore.
No.
This is a letter from April in Virginia, and she wrote this wonderful letter to us with a contribution, and thank you very much, April. Dear Blue Gal and Driftglass, wish this could be for more, but I have to leave a little in my account in case my math is off. A distinct possibility. Thank you both for what you do. Your podcast has become a staple in my home. We listen while I do the laundry, an all-day Saturday affair. And I love hearing, don't you love hearing about where and when people listen, whether they're out on their evening constitutional or listening while they make dinner on Saturday nights or in this case, during the laundry.
Honey, dirty liberals don't have constitutionals. We hate constitutions.
Continuing with the letter, my 14-year-old son, and we have a 14-year-old son too, will make us start over if we haven't been considerate enough to let him know we're starting your show. Like you, I have three kids. Unlike you, they'll all be voting by November of 2016. So the 14-year-old must be their youngest. As they're all in either civics or AP government this year, we've had some lively discussions before the last election. To my delight, I have a quote-unquote mixed marriage. All the kiddos are sounding like Dems. Since daughter is a daddy's girl, I have to thank all the emphasis on lady parts for her almost fanatic disdain for at least some Republicans.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks again for all you do, and here's to another great year, April. We appreciate that so much, but especially the part about, you know, your daughter wanting to please her Republican dad. However,
yes,
you know, every day in every way, the Republican Party is making women into Democrats.
Yes, yes.
Whether they want to be political or not, they're finding it's personal this time over and over again. So,
well, they're finding all kinds of people who once upon a time knew that they were supposed to shut up and act nice and pretend that
women were equal in our society. And
and you're supposed to ignore the crazy shit Archie Bunker says.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because that's polite, even if you disagree with him, you know, just let's not fight about it. Let's just, yeah, he's nuts. Yeah, his ideas are, you know, antediluvian. But so what? You know, let's just all try to get along because it's Thanksgiving, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those people are tired of doing that because Archie Bunker started winning elections and putting his crazy ass policies into law. And suddenly the lady parts discussion was not a hypothetical one around the dinner table. It was a legislative one. About,
you know, what's interesting? My ex, I lived in Birmingham, Alabama for over a decade. And my ex was president of the ACLU of Alabama and did a lot of work on legal stuff down there. And he said that the Southern bigots discovered that being a racial bigot was very bad for business.
Yeah.
It was bad for convention business. It made commerce difficult. And so that had to be abandoned. And, you know, there's the Birmingham Pledge, which is this thing about racial equality that they now have. And there's a lot of work toward recognizing the importance of Martin Luther King and so forth and so on.
Uh-huh.
But and actually, Birmingham, I personally feel, has one of the best museums in the world that I've ever been to. The Civil Rights Museum in Birmingham is well worth the visit. You'll learn a lot. It's exhausting. You need to rest after you go there, but it's a beautiful, beautiful museum. But as my ex pointed out, they substituted racial bigotry for religious bigotry.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's perfectly okay to believe that, you know, we don't have to help the people in New York City because, right. You know, they're not us. They're not
Sodom and Gomorrah, honey.
Right. Yeah. And so it's perfectly okay to be unchristian, downright unchristian with a small c, to people who are not like us.
Right.
And it's not white.
No.
It's Baptist. No. You know, it's evangelical.
But it gets you to the same place.
It gets you to exactly the same place. Yeah. That's the point. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So this and the abortion issue is what encapsulates that for people. Is, you know, I'm a good Christian, wouldn't kill any babies, but it doesn't matter if they're killed, you know, after birth or if we deny them food stamps or whatever, you know.
Or if I can show you a statistic that say the best possible way to prevent pregnancy is contraception and education.
Yeah. No, no.
No, 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 because sex is bad. It says so right here in my little book.
Yeah.
So. And so, yeah, it gets you to the same
same place. Yeah.
It's another form of addiction. It's switching from heroin to meth. It gets you to the same place. And
it's tribalism. You know, Chris Matthews had brought that up. It's tribalism and it's encapsulated in the Republican Party. We have to switch gears now and talk about the CIA.
Yes.
And drones and war and so forth.
And all those things, because this is a topic that needs to be discussed probably by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this little podcast and we should discuss it on here. And I think you and I probably have slightly different opinions about this. I know I have slightly different opinions about the subjects of drones and war and CIA and so forth than many liberals. Not because I think they are right. Now, I mean, not because I think killing people by remote control robot planes is right, or that the death of women and children is a good thing or an acceptable thing. I think it is simply that this is an escalation. This truly was a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
This is an escalation in both the definition of war and the technology available to prosecute that war that simply begs a lot of questions. It demands answers to lots of questions. Like, what do we mean by war anymore? What do we mean by war when there are non-state actors involved? What happens when you're at war with a group of people who will never surrender and who are spread across 20 countries? What happens when you want to invade? Do you invade everyone? That's traditional warfare. Do you have a fixed peace battle in the field with heralds and seconds and observers? Because that's never going to happen.
Well, and what happens when an American citizen joins that foreign army that's stretched over 20 countries?
And it turns out, you know, there were Americans, a handful of Americans. I wrote a little post about this called All Enemies Foreign and Domestic.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Americans joined the Nazi Party. Americans joined the Waffen-SS. There were Americans who were fighting on the side of the Nazis. When the war was over, most of them were repatriated to America. And the American government just sort of lost interest in prosecuting them. A lot of them were just sort of ignored, but that happened after the peace treaty was signed.
A lot of Germans, you know, where a lot of the Germans wound up who emigrated to the United States from Nazi war laboratories, they all wound up in Alabama.
Yeah, going into countries, and so there's
our rockets.
There's lots of there's a Tom Lehrer joke about Russia's German scientists versus our German scientists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's absolutely true.
And there was Eichmann being pulled out of a country without an extradition treaty by the state of Israel. Yep. So there's all these examples throughout history. And the flip side would be the Lincoln Brigade, Americans who left, went overseas to fight on the side of democracy against fascism in Spain, mm-hmm. who were noble people. So we have always gotten involved in other people's wars. We've always stuck our nose in good places and bad. There have been all kinds of historical examples of people crossing borders to get what they needed because the people involved at the country involved wasn't going to give it to them anyway. And we've had this constant escalation of technology over the last 150 years, well, since the beginning of time, I would imagine. but So now you're now you have a case where you have a is a drone any worse than a sniper? Is a drone?
I want to interrupt you for just one moment and tell people that are listening to this that it sounds like we're going down the path of making excuses for Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah,
and I want to make sure that everyone who's listening keeps listening because that's not the road we're going down.
No. But what we're asking is to think about the difficulty of transposing 19th century rules of war into a 21st century world. Mm-hmm. Where borders are porous, where your enemies might be corporations. They might be not, they're certainly non-state actors, or you have failed states that don't really have governments. Where you have, you know, what's the difference between a cruise missile and a drone? What's
the difference between a drone and a CIA agent, you know, killing the duly elected president of Chile?
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't really do that, but we sort of were cool with that. We helped.
I think Kissinger had a lot to do with it.
Well, there was the duly elected president of Chile. I learned because I looked it up, committed suicide.
Oh,
but he committed suicide at the end of a coup, and a coup that we very clearly encouraged.
Yeah.
We also overthrew the duly elected president of Iran.
Yeah.
And installed a Shah. So we have been sticking our nose in other people's business for a good damn long time. We've also, again, we've also sent people, we also had Americans go fight for democracy against fascism on their own. Yeah. So there's all of these exceptions to the traditional rules of war. And on top of that, you add this ability to fly a robot in the sky without ever landing it, using extremely sophisticated targeting technology to find a person or people that you think are bad guys, and then you kill them. And whether they're
That is done via the executive with no oversight.
Right.
And that is, as much as the technology is immoral and is a problem for people, the idea that it is a very small group of people at the executive branch making these decisions with no oversight is twice 200 times the problem of the technology. Yeah.
And there were all kinds of decisions about selection of targets being made by the government in secret during World War II.
Yeah.
All kinds of decisions about which city to firebomb, which city to drop an atomic bomb on, which city to attack, which city to leave alone, what's a value, what's not a value, how many...
Well, and the city that was destroyed just so that we could convince the Germans that we didn't have their code.
Yeah.
You know, we've done that too, just to pretend.
Taking our losses.
Taking our losses to pretend that we don't have the German code. Yeah, I mean...
And we have thrown people into battle knowing that a substantially high number of them are going to die.
Yeah.
We've attacked cities knowing that lots of civilians are going to die. So the idea of...
Well, and as you say, a lot of that has been done at the executive level with no oversight.
Sure.
And I, for one, having read Rachel Maddow's book last year, and if you're really worried about this in a way where you want to do some work about it, reading the book Drift by Rachel Maddow, I think it's a really good place to start.
Yeah.
Because she points out that this problem of executive power in war has been going on since Lincoln, at least.
Yeah. And...
And it's not a problem with one president or one administration or one CIA. It's a problem overall with executive power being ceded to the president by Congress and by the American people, too. I mean, this is something where a lot of people in this country like the drones because they don't. No one has to go to war and be killed. That's a great thing, you know, and. Oh, sure. You know, I trust George W. Bush to keep me safe, or I trust Barack Obama to keep me safe, and not understanding that, no, this isn't about a Republican president or a Democratic president. This is about all of us deciding that the strong man will keep us safe.
Yeah.
And therefore, we can just close our eyes and not think about it. And I really want to pat Ron Wyden on the back. He's the senator from Oregon who, with this, the CIA director confirmation going on, has said, no, the Senate has to do their job, which means
they have
we get to know. We have a job in this, and we have to know what, you can't be You can't have a lack of transparency as far as the law is concerned. You can have a lack of transparency in terms of carrying out a war.
Right.
But you can't tell us that, well, we're not going to tell you what the how we read the law when it comes to these things. And the Senate could just as easily have said, la, 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 we don't have to know because George Bush is in office and we're Republicans.
Right.
And we're not traitors. We're going to fight, you know, for a political battle in a political way.
Yeah.
You know, I got back into this with Pammy Atlas. I know I mentioned this before, but I waded into her
awful, awful
Atlas
site.
Shrugged. And I went to her comment thread and just let everyone know, join me. Let's repeal the Patriot Act. And they were freaking out that, you know, Barack Obama was going to know what library books we took out.
Right.
And he was spying on all of us and so forth, and not recognizing at all that George W. Bush passed the Patriot Act and that it was just as bad then. And one commenter was totally honest with me and said, I trusted George W. Bush and I don't trust Barack Obama.
Yeah, it's that simple.
It's that simple.
I trusted one king, but not
the other. I am a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Because I'm fine with George W. Bush knowing what library books I check out. I'm not okay with a Democratic president knowing that.
Well, and
as long as you're going to admit that it has nothing to do with your privacy, then, you know you're a hypocrite. And he had to own up to it. He was a hypocrite.
Well, and since the days when people figured out how to throw dynamite out of a biplane, people have been horrified at the idea of death from above, that there's some kind of, you know, the once you master the skies.
Well, read those quotes, because
well, this is sort of how long this has been coming.
Yeah.
The first one is a quote that I'll let you guess where it's from.
But you do get to take a drink.
You do. You absolutely do. Quiet people go out in the morning and see air fleets passing overhead, dripping death. Now, that's pretty terrifying. And that certainly sounds like a drone army to me. That's from H.G. Wells, The War in the Air, 1907.
Yeah.
That's 110 years ago, give or take. And he wrote a lot, and H.G. Wells wrote a lot about those things. The second quote is, let us never forget this. Since the day of the air, the old frontiers are gone. When you think of the defense of England, you no longer think of the chalk cliffs of Dover. You think of the Rhine. That's where our frontier lies. Yes. That's Stanley Baldwin in 1934.
Yep.
The idea that you have to, that once the air becomes a battlefield, once command of the air becomes a thing that you want to have, you're going to have armies raining death down on populations. And it can be indiscriminate or it can be pretty accurate. But that's just going to happen because that's the nature of technology. What has changed is what we call war.
Yeah.
What do you define as a war? And I wish I had a really good answer to that. You know who should have a really good answer to that? The Congress of the United States.
Yeah. And I've noticed that Ron Wyden's involvement is really about changing the Congress and understanding that the administration's going to, whatever administration it is, this is my point, and this is Rachel Maddow's point too in her book, as far as the way I read it, is the executive is always going to hoard power.
Yes.
And that's, they're never going to give it up unless Congress comes and takes it.
Yeah.
And the American people insist that Congress come and take it. And that's a tough row to hoe, because there's plenty of fat and happy Americans who don't want to go to war. You don't want to see their college student child go to war. I'm one of them. I don't want my kids to go fight a battle. I'd much rather, if we have to fight someone, it be done by remote control, because I don't want my son going and getting killed in the mountains of Afghanistan. I mean, I have to admit that, but I don't like war at all. I think we need, you know, the John McCain school is much more frightening to me in terms of, well, there are 10 wars we need to go fight.
And this is, and I don't in any way mean to disparage anyone who's comes
He's
from
in the military. Oh, no.
Military family, their sense of patriotism or esprit or their love of country at all. But
on the contrary,
the nature of war is no longer saber and cavalry charges.
Yeah,
it's no longer about honorable death in battle. It's, you know, the idea, starting with the American Civil War, with the industrialization of warfare, with the use of machines to do our fighting for us, to kill the enemy more efficiently. And then, hey, let's go after the enemy cities. Let's go after the places where they produce food. Because once you starve an army, they'll stop fighting. Go after the places where they produce weapons. Won't that kill civilians? Sure, but civilians die anyway. And maybe they shouldn't be making this war in the first place. And then it becomes a terror. I mean, the entire Nazi approach was terrorizing populations into submission.
And I think the thing that all of us who feel comforted by the fact that we don't have to go to war because there are drones need to recognize that there will come a day when the enemy has drones.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and, you know, then all of a sudden it's a different game.
Yes.
And we have to think about our behavior in regards to that and reduce weaponry. I'm just a pacifist in that regard. We need to get rid of these nukes and... I have strong opinions about that.
I know you do. I know you do. And I have deeply divided opinions about them because there's this one world that I would like us to have. And there's this other world where I live. And the world where I live, in 5 or 10 years, a decent cyber attack will be able to shut down the power grid for a major American city. Mm-hmm. That is a terrorist attack. That will kill people in hospitals. That will cause inconvenience, traffic jams. It'll kill God knows how many people indiscriminately as a weapon of terror, as a way of forcing the people at the other end of that attack to comply or to give you what you want or to back off or whatever the demand is. And going after the enemy or some enemy coming after us in that way is what the future looks like. I wish it weren't. I wish the future were not that place. But it looks like it is because it looks like technology is just going to take us there. So like Truman using the atom bomb, according to reports, he didn't give it a second thought.
Yeah.
Because it was like, no, a million Americans are going to die taking the Japanese islands. And I have this weapon that can end the war in a week. Are you insane? Of course I'm going to use it. What are you, nuts? Well, now take that forward 50 years. I can either raise... If I really want to do this, if I want to prosecute the war that we appear to be in forever, I can raise a million-man army, and I can send our kids off to Afghanistan to go door to door, and which, you know, it's a horrifying alternative, and I would prefer just not to do it at all, but nobody's asking my opinion about that. Or I can send fleets of robots in the air because that's an advantage that we have temporarily, and by God, I'm going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use it as long as we are the undisputed owners of this technology. I'm going to use it to do what I think is necessary to keep my country safe, which is probably why I shouldn't be president, because I'd find that incredibly tempting. I would find that incredibly tempting.
Yeah.
You know, when you're the only nuclear superpower on Earth, it's easy to decide that using atomic bombs it was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, when someone else has them, suddenly it's really important to contain this technology. Because now it can come back to us.
Well, and I worry too, Driftglass, and I don't know if you worry about this, but I do worry that a lot of what's going on with fighting terror has much more to do with the reason that we're not bringing people to trial has to do with, A, not creating a show for people to rally around, and secondly, protecting Israeli and Saudi. We arrested people that they wanted us to arrest and protecting Saudi and Israeli, their secret service and their intelligence gathering operations. And it worries me a lot that some of the decisions we are making really have nothing to do with keeping Americans safe and more to do with, you know, the secret operations that we think we have to protect.
Protecting the secrets of our friends.
Yeah.
And here's the problem. All of this is just speculation.
I know.
And I don't know. I know that I'm not surprised when I find out my government does terrible things in my name. And I know that we have a body called the Congress. A bunch of liberals getting angry about this is a good thing. But pretending that it is a unique moment when the drones are anything more than a ratcheting up of one uptick in the technological slope on which we're already on.
And we've been on since Lincoln.
Yeah.
I mean, really, and perhaps before. You know, Lincoln, if you've seen that movie, and he talks about my being reelected is the American people's opinion that what I've done so far is constitutional.
Yeah.
And what he did was start throwing Americans in jail without habeas corpus. That's what he was doing.
Well, you know, Lincoln targeted Americans for killing.
Yeah.
Because Lincoln never acknowledged that the South was a different country.
It was a different country.
Ergo, all the hundreds of thousands of Southerners that Lincoln killed were all American citizens.
Well, and he put them in horrible camps that had dysentery and no food. And, you know, this was not a pleasant man who did things with, you know, in total regard for humanity. He didn't.
No.
He fought that war like a mofo.
Yeah.
And we forget that because he's our hero, but
he's on the penny
because he's on the penny.
Yeah. But I don't want to dwell on this, but the people who were telling him, look, this war is not going to be over by Christmas. You're going to have to kill a lot of Southerners. You're going to have to burn their cities to the ground. You're going to have to make this so horrifyingly unbearable for them that they will be forced to surrender. And even as their cities were burning, they were still suing for peace on the grounds that they get to keep their slaves.
Yep.
They were dug in like ticks, and they had to be burned out like ticks. And that's just the fact of the matter. Now, I don't have to like that. I don't have to like the fact that war is horrible and that innocent people die in it and that technology makes it both more precise.
Easy and palatable. Yeah.
And more sterile. I don't have to like any of that. But those are the facts on the table. Again, what Barack Obama should do, I think you mentioned this, what he should, if I would love to see him go to Congress and say, okay, I would like a declaration of war.
On Al-Qaeda. And let's start a draft and start sending people wherever they are.
All the countries
Yemen,
where they're, we're going to go in wherever we feel the need to, wherever, and this is not a conventional warfare. There's no Berlin to be bombed. There's no Tokyo to surrender. They're not going to give up until they have been degraded to the point where they can no longer function and where they're expelled from the countries that are giving them shelter.
And your sons and daughters aren't going to be in the Battle of the Bulge. They're going to be hit by a roadside bomb
in some godforsaken
place and brought home in pieces.
Yes.
Hopefully still alive.
Or let's not do this.
Or let's not do that.
Then you tell me that you deny my request for a declaration of war against this organization, this identifiable organization, you deny, and then we're done. We're fine. That's great. But if you want this war prosecuted, here are your three alternatives. Yes. One, send in armies, invade countries, bankrupt the country, and have this thing run on forever. Number two, do it by remote control and by proxy.
Yeah.
And number three, do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your three choices. Pick one.
And put it on the Congress, which is where the Constitution says it is in the first place, to have that debate. And you know, I think that's part of what Ron Wyden's trying to do, is say, look, we have a say in this as representatives of the American people, and hasn't been the case.
And this is sort of what
Charlie... And he's in the minority.
This is what Charlie Rangel was trying to do with getting the vote reestablished.
Yeah, with getting...
The draft reestablished.
A case, yeah.
If you want this war, then pay for it.
Yep.
And if you
the
want...
the blood of your kids.
That's right. Make your kids go to war.
Yeah.
Then we know you're serious. But technology that makes it easy to do things by remote control, mm-hmm. where nobody gets hurt, where the pilots are 3,000 miles away in a bunker with a joystick, is here. And you can't put that genie back in the bottle. What you can do is have a debate about how do you continue to have a democracy under these circumstances. And the answer is, well, you pretty much have to demand that your elected representatives in Congress demand answers and are held accountable for the decision to either go to war or not go to war. And that has been something we have failed at as a country for a very, very long time.
And that doesn't mean that the Senate Intelligence Committee doesn't keep secrets.
No.
You know, that is not the case.
And it doesn't mean that when you're prosecuting a war, you shouldn't keep secrets.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of things you shouldn't be telling people when you're tactical things, strategic things that you should not be broadcasting.
Yeah.
That's why they had all those posters during World War II about loose lips sinking ships. But this is a debate we should not be having about drones, and we should not be having about women and children dying in war, as tragic as that is. This is a debate we should be having about executive power.
Right.
And what are its limits, and what does it mean to be at war, and what do we how do we authorize this country to go to war, under what circumstances, and what does it mean when we win? That's the debate, and that's a really good debate to have, and I have some very strong opinions about what we should be doing instead of bombing people.
Right.
But that's the real debate. And I think that's
that book Drift is a good place to start. We really enjoyed reading it and listening to it.
I know we should sit around and read Charlotte's Web to our kids, but we don't. You read Rachel Maddow's book, and then we talk about Chris Hayes.
Rachel Maddow's book to people.
Fight the power.
Every week we post to our website and Facebook page an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Kit Kat. And Driftglass, Kit Kat totally reminds me of the older kitty that we have.
Yes.
It took many moons for Kit Kat to allow people to pet her and to sit on the sofa and be social and loving. And sometimes it does take time. And
it does.
A lot of patience. I know when older kitty moved here and was very...
catatonic.
Unbelievably mental. We really considered putting her to sleep because of her mental state.
Yeah, it was cruel.
And I mean, was absolutely cruel to keep her in this kind of mess. I mean, she was just mentally hid in the basement and hissed at everybody. And
well, she had this
really bad shape.
The quick story is this cat had lived with me for all of her life, unabused.
Yeah, she was born in your house. Yeah,
she was born in the castle, the late lamented castle. I think I should post a picture of the castle, don't you, Blue Gal?
Yeah, sure.
The interior, an interior shot of the castle. I've got a few of them. And you can't trace me. I've carefully hidden all the details.
he's not there anymore.
Elder Cat was born there, part of a litter. The rest of the litter were fine. She was nuts and was nuts from the day she was born, and paranoid and hissing and angry at strangers. And really the only person who could pet her was me. And I had to do it one handed because if you put two hands in her, she'll run away. And that's where she lived her whole life, and in perfect safety, perfect comfort, fed and loved, and completely paranoid with strangers from the day she was born. And then I move here, and we pack her up in the cage, and she just went catatonic.
Yeah.
No pun intended. She refused to leave the cage for we left it open in the living room. Yeah. She refused to leave it for like a day and a half.
Yeah.
We finally shook her out of it and prodded her loose. She ran up behind a little end table and tried to burrow into the wall.
Yeah, she tried to climb into the corner of the room. Yeah.
And it was just bad. Pinned herself in the corner and clung to the wall, literally sunk her nails into the wall and stayed there and stayed there and stayed there and wouldn't eat, wouldn't. And we had to pry her loose. And then she, scratched and hissed and yelled and peed on everything and ran to the basement. And it was just awful. And this was a cat who was in extreme psychic distress.
Yeah.
And to the point where we thought it would be cruel for her to continue living like this. I don't know who would take her because this is the friendliest environment I can imagine. And she's having a real trouble. And then magically, I swear to God. Well, the middle child's the cat whisperer.
Yeah, she is. She is.
Through a continuous application of exposure to kids, rambunctious kids, and treats. And her mom being here, her mom
was here. Yeah.
This cat changed completely.
Yeah, she really has.
I don't mean mildly.
She gets in your lap. She gets in your lap to be pet. Yep.
And purrs and rolls up on her tummy and takes treats out of people's hands and will sit still for an ear rub.
Yep.
And I have never seen the like.
Yeah, it really is a transformation. So,
way to go.
There's way more information about our cat than you needed.
But it does happen.
And this week's Internet Kitty, Kit Kat, it happened to her too. So we're very glad to hear that. You can send us your Internet Kitty at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We love hearing from you. Please feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at that address or at our post office box address, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union letter on the air unless you say otherwise.
Yeah.
So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties beat the spread on the Super Bowl power outage.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Confessional F podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.